Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Friday, the Army Corps of Engineers said it plans to close the main camp at Standing Rock to, quote, protect the general public from the dangerous confrontations between demonstrators and law enforcement officials, end quote. In a letter to Standing Rock Tribal Chair Dave Archambault, the Corps says it continues to encourage everyone at the main camp to move to a free speech zone south of the Cannonball River or to a more sustainable location for the winter. The Army Corps says it has no plans to forcibly remove anyone, but those who stay do so, risking arrest or ticketing. Water protectors say they're not going anywhere. The move comes just a week after water protectors were shot with rubber bullets and sprayed with tear gas, pepper spray, and cold water in freezing temperatures. According to the Standing Rock Medic and Healer Council, approximately 300 water protectors were injured last Sunday by excessive force and treated for hypothermia. At least 26 people had to be evacuated by ambulance to three hospitals in surrounding areas. Sophia Walansky, a 21-year-old water protector from New York City, was airlifted to County Medical Center in Minneapolis, where surgeons are trying to save her arm and hand and prevent a possible amputation. According to the Standing Rock Medic and Healer Council, Sophia Walansky was severely injured when a concussion grenade thrown by police hit her left arm and exploded. For its part, the North Dakota Highway Patrol dispute that claim, blaming the injury on a propane tank they say was found on the bridge. But the medics say they have proof that it was actually a concussion grenade thrown by police. According to the Morton County Sheriff's Office, 536 people have been arrested so far. And a number of these people have been charged with felonies, which means that DNA samples have been taken. We are having a hard time, having some trouble getting our guest today. It is snowing currently at Standing Rock, and so we believe that one of our guests is on her way to a landline, and hopefully we'll connect with her. In the meantime, if you'd like to call in and express your views about what is happening at Standing Rock, what you think of the coverage that you've seen so far, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Over the last week, I have interviewed a number of people who were at Sunday's rally, Sunday's action, including Jo Beth Brownnodder. And this is the first time that she has been involved in an action. So many of the people on the front line have never been involved in a political action before. And she was tear gassed. She was sprayed with cold water in freezing temperatures. She told me that she still hears the screams from the front line. She said, quote, "I'm getting sick. Hypothermia is no joke. My lungs and ribs hurt from coughing, and I'm wheezing like crazy. Despite all that I am going through, I will continue to stand tall in prayer." This was her third action against the $3.8 billion Dakota Access Pipeline, and she was just diagnosed with pneumonia. She actually lives near Standing Rock. She's a tribal member, and she said that as she watched people from miles away traveling to Standing Rock, she knew that she had to join the growing movement and express solidarity. And she says she has started a brand new chapter in her life. Now, I have interviewed so many people who've said the same thing. David Yellow Eyes, for example, left his job in Portland, Oregon to join the Water Protectors. He has since lost his job and lost his house and all of his belongings. A lot of people are putting everything on the line to be there at Standing Rock. And again, the Army Corps on Friday has said that the camp needs to be closed to, quote, protect the public from dangerous confrontations. They put out a new release saying they do not plan to forcibly remove anyone, but those who stay risk being arrested and ticketed. And joining us to talk about the latest is Mark Trahant, an independent journalist covering Native American politics. And he's also been covering Standing Rock. Hi, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. So, Mark, what are your thoughts on this decision by the Army Corps of Engineers saying that it plans to close the main camp by December 5th? The water protectors say they aren't going anywhere.
Right. It's actually one of those ones where you're wondering, you're shaking your head, wondering what they're trying to say. Chairman Archambault, Dave Archambault, the second, has really downplayed that. He said that really what they're doing is protecting themselves from liability and that they're not going to act. They're just basically saying this area is closed. We're not going to allow people to be here. But then the next step would be actually doing something about it. And Morton County is actually already complaining that the federal government isn't going to take the steps required to remove people. And it's really impractical. To remove that many people would be absolutely brutal and not the kind of images that neither the administration nor the next administration nor the state of North Dakota would really like to see broadcast around the world.
Right, because over the Thanksgiving weekend, the camp looks like it's doubled in size. It's impossible to count the number of people there, but I saw numbers 5,000 to 10,000. So the camp is pretty big at this point.
Exactly, and continues to grow. One of the things coming up very soon that plays into all of this is a national group of veterans has promised to be and to join the lines, and they're talking about a significant action on December 4th, the day before this new supposed deadline.
Right. In fact, I've read some veteran statements saying that they're planning to stand between the water protectors and the police forces.
Correct. And we'll be seeing very interesting to see how that gets organized and what happens, basically.
Now, Mark, just to talk about what goes on behind the scenes, I have written several emails to the DOJ. Basically, if you write the Army Corps of Engineers, the Army Corps says because they're involved in litigation, you have to go to the Department of Justice. So I've been in contact with people at the Department of Justice. But at this point, there's a lot of questions that really need to be answered, including who's making these decisions to close the camp? Will federal law enforcement be involved? What kind of weaponry will be involved? Will the campers have a specific amount of time to leave? What if they resist? What steps will be taken to avoid violent altercations? I mean, these are really important questions that need to be answered.
Right. And the department, the Army Corps of Engineers, did release a second statement that said they would not be enforcing it. So some of it is kind of, at this point, really it's down the road what steps then would require. And you're right. I mean, the idea that the federal government would use either, I mean, even the marshals is what has often been said, but the size of force required of U.S. marshals would just be extraordinary.
The DOJ has said over and over that federal law enforcement is not involved in this. But over the weekend, there were photographs of ICE SUVs at the action. So to your knowledge, is the federal government involved in these crackdowns?
They're involved in the sense that they're calling on other law enforcement to join, so they're under the direction of the state. They're not there as federal officers as much as just general law enforcement personnel. It'd be the same as sheriffs coming from Minneapolis and other places, working at the discretion of the sheriff. There are a number, I mean, one of the stories going around now is that the National Guard is going to be enlarged, and that becomes really problematic because the operating law that the National Guard is working on now is under state authority. And if they were to expand that and make it under federal authority, then you suddenly have the Posse Comitatus Act take effect, and it becomes illegal for them to do any law enforcement work. So it's a really tricky situation. But the key thing is that the federal presence there is not as federal officers, it's just law enforcement.
A lot of people are talking about where Obama is on this. The last time President Obama spoke about Standing Rock was on November 2nd, when now this, a fairly new startup that I had never heard of, asked him about water protectors being sprayed with rubber bullets. And now this is a startup by people who used to work at the Huffington Post. And he said, quote, "It's a challenging situation. I think that my general rule when I talk to governors and state and local officials, whenever they're dealing with protests, is there's an obligation for protesters to be peaceful and there's an obligation for authorities to show restraint." He went on to say, "I want to make sure that as everybody is exercising their constitutional rights to be heard, that both sides are refraining from situations that might result in people being hurt," end quote. Last time, again, he spoke about this was on November 2nd. Mark, I'm surprised that members of the White House press corps have not asked any questions about Standing Rock.
Well, they'd have to read about this event in the first place to do that. Not to be too cynical, but the national press just has not been engaged in this story. There have been a few bright moments, most recently the New York Times editorial, but the day-to-day press is just not engaged the way it should on a story this important. one of the, I think, signs of patience that folks don't get is how complicated it is for the president. He has to basically get several federal agencies to be in agreement, and the White House just can't command that. It's something that has to be more organic. And my thinking is that they're racing to get this done before January 20th with something that'll hold up, that'll have some legitimate legal basis.
Well, let's take a few calls. And Mark, I know you have to leave us in just a couple minutes. Let's hear from Dorit in San Francisco. Hi, Dorit. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi there. Well, I've been following this, obviously, from the get-go. San Francisco, good liberal, donating, sharing information. But the two questions that I have are, one is, why don't I, and I'm looking around, so why don't I hear more about legal defense, something that is, you know, really people stepping up to put some powerful defense in place? And the other question is, what right now, you know, from now on, what is it that we can do to help? What's the most efficient, the best way of supporting this cause?
All right. Well, I'll answer the first question, and then we'll get Mark to weigh in on legal defense. When I was last at Standing Rock a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to a number of lawyers. They said that they're in desperate need of progressive lawyers to go to Standing Rock because, again, 536 people have been arrested. Mm-hmm. Many of them have been charged with felonies. Now, I interviewed a number of people who were arrested. They were in jail for up to 3 days, didn't get much food. A lot of older women had to sleep on the floors, and they got pneumonia. And they said that they gave DNA samples without asking questions because they were so tired and so traumatized, and they wanted to do whatever it took to just get out of jail. And so when you give a DNA sample, I mean, that's a big deal. Now, I've since read that some of the felony charges have been dropped, but it's up to the people who have been arrested to get that expunged. So it doesn't automatically get expunged. They have to do it. And I don't think this information has been shared yet. The group that's there is the Red Owl Legal Collective, and they're working nonstop to get oral testimonies from people. But what they said is they need to file a large lawsuit. And in order to do that, it takes a lot of lawyers. And it's a pretty small team at this point. Mark, are you back on the line with us?
I am.
Okay, so we just had a question about legal defense. And I was just saying that the lawyers that I met at the camp said that they're in dire need of progressive lawyers to go to Standing Rock to represent people who've been arrested and in many cases charged with felonies.
Right. And that process actually is starting this week. So it's going to be increasingly important going forward.
And what have you heard, Mark, about the legal aspects? Because so many people have been arrested multiple times, including youth. Some of the youth that have been on this show over the past few months have been arrested two or three times.
Well, Martin County has just been very aggressive in charging for felonies or taking the extreme aggressive stance on whatever they're charging folks with. So then it becomes a question of are people willing to fight it on all measures or pick a particular part of the case? It's going to be very complicated law, and it's going to be very expensive on both sides. So far, the state of North Dakota has spent something like $10 million on law enforcement, and I'm struck because they're already claiming how it's a burden. But the litigation is going to be far more expensive than anything we've seen yet.
And before we go on to talk about what people can do to support the camp and what's going on, I just think it's really important to talk about the trauma that's been happening. Many of the people that I've interviewed who were arrested say that they keep hearing screams from the front lines when they go to bed at night. A lot of people are very traumatized. And when I left the last time, there were so many new tents set up specifically to deal with the trauma, because you're dealing with trauma from the arrests, but combine that with historical trauma, and it's pretty deep.
And the trauma of what's occurring on the front lines where you're being shot at. Rubber bullets are bullets, and the ice water on a very cold night, all of that plays into what people are thinking.
Wambly Redbird was arrested recently. He's a member of the International Indigenous Youth Council. And Aaron Wise, the media liaison for the council, posted a couple days ago that he was being held in Fargo. He said that police split his lip and bruised his chin. They slammed him to the ground. He also complained of a back injury from being held down with knees to zip tie him, though he was complying with arrest. He's just 19 years old. And I spoke with Wambly on Facebook last night. He said, "I'm out, I'm good, and I'm ready again to go to my next action." I mean, the bravery of so many of these people is just really incredible.
Yeah, that's true. And one of the stories that keeps cropping up is this fundamental misunderstanding about the nature of civil disobedience. The police have this idea that people will stand in the corner and hold a sign, and that's not what this is about. It's about showing injustice. And you show injustice in a multiple number of ways, including getting arrested and showing that the system is acting corruptly.
Mark Trahan is an independent journalist and faculty member at the University of North Dakota. He is covering Standing Rock, and he also covers Native issues. And now I would like to welcome Candy Mossett to the show. Candy is an organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network, a member of the Mandan and Hidatsa tribes. Candy has been at Standing Rock since August. Hi, Candy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Sorry, everybody. We're in a blizzard here, and on the way from the camp over to the casino, we saw one of our friends in the ditch,
oh.
So we had to get her out, and so people are slipping and sliding and hitting the ditch, so if anybody's in the area, you need to go very slow.
I saw your photo last night of the snow on the camp, Candy, and I was going to ask about that, so a blizzard has hit.
Yeah, we're expected to get about 12 inches of snow. We're in this winter storm watch until Wednesday at 6 p.m. It started raining last night, which turned into snow, so there's a layer of ice underneath, and it won't stop until Wednesday.
Wow. And Candy, can you tell us about the efforts to winterize the camp? Because when I was there a couple weeks ago, a lot of people have tents that are not made for winter conditions.
So what we're working on is the straw bales to come in to winterize around the bottoms, but basically people have been getting taken in to either winterize teepees, or there's quite a few yurts that are now on the ground that are pretty cozy. There's a lot of wood stoves, which we appreciate the call out. The issue is becoming the wood, having the wood to keep the wood stoves fueled. And so I think that it got really real for people.
Mm.
Last night and today that, oh, we're in North Dakota and it is winter.
Right.
So we're continuing to have meetings, we're continuing to do wellness check-ins, we're continuing to educate people on covering up, staying warm, the reality of frostbite, things of that nature, and asking people that if they are not able to be self-sufficient, this might not be the time for you to be here.
And for people who cannot make it and want to make a financial donation, Dorit just called and said, what is the best way to contribute?
Okay, what I'm going to tell you is what I'm going to tell everybody. The number one most important best way to contribute is to pray every day. Send your prayers, whatever it is, whatever that looks like for you, because there's a lot of power in that prayer. If you want to contribute monetarily, you can definitely visit our website. You can go to standwithstandingrock.net. That money goes directly to the tribe. You can donate to the original camp, sacredstonecamp.org, which goes to their camp, south of the Cannonball River. Or you can donate to ochetishakowingcamp.org, which will go to the large camp that most people do see now, the Ochetishakowing camp. And then indigenousrising.org goes directly to the Indigenous Environmental Network, where we've been holding down the media, the logistics, and that money goes to the winter camp, or the eco village, as some are calling it. That camp is not yet ready. We needed to make sure that we were working with the local community, with the tribe, working with Cannonball, and that's why that process has been ongoing for the last 2.5 months. And we are just now beginning to build on that site, and it is not yet ready.
Candy, I watched the press conference over the weekend in response to the Army Corps of Engineers saying it plans to close the main camp by December 5th. And after the break, I'll ask you to give us a visual so people can think about what this looks like from Bismarck, for example. But What is the response of the camp? The Army Corps just sent out a new release saying that it does not plan to forcibly remove anyone, but those who stay risk being arrested.
So that's the question mark. We have a camp meeting coming up here in a few hours, and there are preparations being made for what that might look like, because we have heard the various talk around the Army National Guard being activated and potentially, coming into Bismarck and Mandan as early as December 3rd, which, of course, they're going to need to do their own training. The letter itself, it says that they will not forcibly remove people, the Army Corps of Engineers. So we just have to be really cautious about what that still means. And we remain in our same way, which is we're here in prayer and ceremony. Executive Order 13007 of the federal government allows Native Indigenous peoples of this country to remain in prayer and ceremony on federal land. So we're not going anywhere.
And Mark, before we let you go, what are you looking at right now in terms of articles? Where do you see this movement going from here?
Well, I think there's a long way to go. I still think the Obama administration is moving slowly, but they are moving. They're trying to get some legal basis before the end of the year to, I would hope, to deny the easement. And I think they want to do something that's going to tie it up for some time. There's a whole bunch of movements, and there are a lot of lawyers working across federal agencies to try to make sure that federal lands are protected as much as possible. And I think this is part of that same overall view of what can we do now and make sure that it holds up in court.
And so just to let listeners know, the majority of the pipeline has already been constructed. And when you say easement, you're talking specifically about the part of the pipeline that would go under the Missouri River, which is the tribe's main source of drinking water and provides water to 18 million people.
Correct. And it's really important to remember that this pipeline was designed to not have federal approval, that it was really designed to keep it limited as possible. And this is the 1% that does require federal authorization.
And also, every time we do a show about Standing Rock, I think it's important to note that the original pipeline route was supposed to go north of Bismarck, which is 90% white. When people there expressed concern about a possible leak, it was then rerouted to go to the tribe's doorstep. And so, Mark, legally, what can Obama do at this point?
Well, he's got to work through the federal agencies, and the federal agency will have to come up with a finding, and then he can use that finding. What I think he's going to try to do is tie it to the executive order on consultation, where the Army Corps of Engineers just did not do the process by its own standards correctly in terms of how it consulted with the tribe about this project. That means then the next administration would not only have to undo the regulations, but they would have to go back and relook at the executive order on consultation, and all of that would take a long time. One of the key points in this is that this pipeline is really excess capacity. The Bakken oil is in decline. It's starting to decline in terms of how much oil is being produced. So really, they don't need it. And at some point, if it keeps dragging on longer and longer, investors are going to say, you know what, we don't need this pipeline.
And Mark, you've said that before on the show, but can you elaborate on that before we let you go? You've often said this is not needed because so many of us are focused on the movement. We're not really focused on the oil itself. Where is this oil going to go, and why is this pipeline being built in the first place?
This pipeline is being built to move oil to Illinois for refineries. And the idea is eventually it would help boost global markets so that our oil would be shipped around the world. And the Bakken oil, because of the price of oil, has just been in decline for some time now, this last year. The latest report I saw said that by next year they think it could be down to under 800,000 barrels, so another shrinkage of about 20%. And that just means all of these, right now they ship it mostly by rail, and that will continue no matter what. So it's a question of whether that you can grow something that's not growing.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay.
Mark Trahant is an independent journalist and faculty member at the University of North Dakota. He has been covering Native issues for decades. And when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Candy Mossett, an organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network. On today's Your Call, we are getting an update from Standing Rock, where they are currently dealing with a storm. It's very, very cold there in North Dakota. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
can hear me right now, but I...
This is Your Call on KLW, local public radio. If you have a perspective that hasn't been heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may post a comment or a question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are getting an update from Standing Rock in North Dakota. It's very cold. They're currently dealing with a storm. On Friday, the Army Corps of Engineers says it plans to close the main camp by December 5th. They say they have no plans to forcibly remove anyone, but those who stay do so at the risk of being ticketed or arrested. Water protectors say they're not going anywhere. If you have a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. At last Sunday's action, water protectors were shot with rubber bullets and sprayed with tear gas, pepper spray, and cold water in freezing temperatures. According to the Standing Rock Medic and Healer Council, 300 people were injured by excessive force and treated for hypothermia. At least 26 had to be evacuated by ambulance to three hospitals in surrounding areas. 536 people so far have been arrested. Many have been charged with felonies. And we're getting the latest today with Candy Mossett, an organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network. And let's go to our next caller, Margaret in Oakland. Hi, Margaret.
Yes, let me... can you hear me, Rose?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I have to turn my radio down because I've been waiting. I'm just calling to say that I'm going to be mailing you a copy of a column that was in the Progressive Populist entitled 10 Things the Media Haven't Told You About Standing Rock. And it lists all the rights of the Indian nations have under the treaties that were signed and are part of the Constitution of the United States.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll look for that, Margaret. Thanks for calling. Let's go next to Marina in San Francisco. Hi, Marina.
My husband and toddler and I went to Standing Rock last Friday. We were there on Sunday when the big assault happened. We were at the casino. And we come back and we're Facebooking and, you know, doing everything we can to tell everyone we know about what's going on because the media is just, you know, doing a horrific job of telling the story. And, you know, we're signing the change.org petitions and forwarding them to everyone we know and, you know, stop the Dakota Access Pipeline, change.org, remove the sheriff from the sheriff's office in Morton County. Do those make a difference? Are those helping? Should we be writing CNN and telling them to accurately portray what's going on? Because, you know, I'm reading what they're writing and it's wrong and it's deceitful and it's so frustrating. You know, do these change.org petitions help? I think that's my biggest question.
All right, thank you. Candy, what about that? So many petitions are going around. Do these any of these make a difference?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't hear the caller.
Oh, okay. So
I can hear you.
Okay, I'll let you know what the callers say. Marina was at Standing Rock last Friday, and she's been sharing information, but she's really frustrated with media coverage. And she mm-hmm. wonders if petitions from organizations like Change.org make any difference.
It's a questionable if petitions in general make a difference, because sometimes I feel like we get stuck in that petition culture where we're like, I feel like I did something, I signed a petition for my computer, check, I'm done, and then other work doesn't get done. What I would urge people to do other than, you know, go ahead and sign a petition, but more importantly, write a letter to the Obama administration. One letter is worth 10 phone calls even, to plead with the administration to deny the easement for the permit to bore underneath the Missouri River, and at the very least, to require a full environmental impact statement. They can write letters to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers offices in D.C. and to the Obama administration, and that would be, I think, one of the most helpful things.
We have an email from Sharon who says, write your legislators. I have written Barbara Lee, Barbara Boxer, and Dianne Feinstein. Candy, so far, Senator Bernie Sanders has been the most forceful politician, saying that Obama should stop the pipeline. Senator Al Franken sent a letter to Attorney General Loretta Lynch recently, asking her to investigate what has been happening to water protectors. Senator Cory Booker also sent a letter recently, but there haven't really been that many politicians who've been speaking out. What are your thoughts on that?
It could be because the political world, they might be fearful of what the potential outcome might be. I think that we definitely need more politicians to be speaking out and to be standing with Standing Rock because, you know, what I think it was Margaret said, I heard her, there are legally binding treaties that are allowing, you know, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe to have the rights that we have on the land that we're on, the unceded treaty territory. So that's 1851 and 1868 Fort Laramie treaties. And I think that maybe these politicians don't even know their own history. Hmm. So maybe they just need to read about those and get a little bit more updated and educated on that.
And in October, Senators Bernie Sanders, Patrick Leahy, Dianne Feinstein, Ben Cardin, and Ed Markey, all Democrats, sent a letter to President Obama requesting the administration halt construction until tribes are consulted and a full environmental review is conducted. What do you think about calls for a full environmental review at this point?
Well, an environmental impact statement should have been done by law in the first place. This pipeline was allowed to go through across four states, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois, over 1,100 miles long, under something called Nationwide Permit 12, which is an old, outdated mode of permitting, which is used for projects that are small, like a boat ramp, something that's less than 1 acre in size, to expedite processes of boat ramps. And so that Nationwide Permit 12 should have never been used in the first place. So any permits given underneath that should be rescinded, and a full environmental impact statement should have been done in the first place and should still be done now.
Earlier this week on the PBS NewsHour, the CEO of Energy Transfer Partners, Kelsey Warren, was on. He was asked to comment on the fate of water protectors who plan to winterize the camp and stay until the pipeline is defeated. And he says, quote, if they want to stick around and continue to do what they're doing, great, but we're building the pipeline. Candy, there's a water protector at the camp who has a drone. And he's been getting amazing coverage and footage of what's happening on the ground that usually, obviously, we wouldn't have access to because the police are essentially protecting the pipeline at this point. What do you know about what kind of construction is being done?
So Kelsey Warren is just trying to make his funders and his shareholders feel more comfortable. Any statement that they put out saying that they're going to build the pipeline makes us happy because it makes us know that we got them on the rope. They're scared, and they're trying to tell their shareholders not to be afraid. We're telling the shareholders, you should be very afraid. This pipeline is becoming obsolete before it's been even built. We know that we've costed this company millions of dollars. And so with our drones, drone to be wild photography, we do know that they had the ability to drill. When they said that they were going to drill, it's because they can legally drill straight down 200 feet, which is still on their private property. So everybody was in fear about this, and we didn't want people to be in fear about that. What's happening, what we're being told, is that the Army Corps of Engineers is having a person on site ensuring that they do not go any further, that they do not bore, because they say, they have told us, that it's not a matter of just a fine. If they try to drill, it will effectively shut down the project.
Can you paint a visual for us, Candy? Because for people who haven't been there, it can be difficult to put this in your mind, what it looks like. So when you fly into Bismarck, North Dakota, which is the capital of North Dakota, you used to be able to drive along Highway 1806, which is right by the Missouri River, and get to the main camp. It took about 45 minutes. But if you take Highway 1806 at this point, you're stopped by a National Army Guard checkpoint, which is right near a very big law enforcement camp. They tell you to turn around and take Highway 6. Can you talk about the section of 1806 that is essentially being, well, it's being blocked by the police, and the pipeline is essentially being protected at this point?
Yeah, it's blocked from the north and now from the south as well. As of October 27th, they have been blocking the Backwater Bridge, effectively cutting out any ability to get emergency personnel down here. And so when the Army Corps of Engineers said that they wanted us to move for people's safety, it's just all a load of BS, because the reason why we can't have emergency personnel services coming through here is because the Army National Guard and the police are they themselves blocking the bridge. And what we tried to do that last Sunday when everybody was hurt was move the vehicles. And we successfully towed one of the burnt out vehicles before all heck broke loose. And so on the ground here, the best thing that people can do if they do come is to just go directly through Main Street Mandan to Highway 6. And you take Highway 6 south. You get to the sign that says 48. Take a left. That's Highway 24. And that cuts you back over to 1806. Then you have to go up north to get back to where the campsite is. So they have us going in a big roundabout way. But it's really awful and terrible the way they're treating us here. In fact, there was a fire that was started across from the camp that burned 400 acres. We did not have any assistance with from anybody, even though several 911 calls went out, several calls to the sheriff's department went out. And 6.5 hours later, a helicopter was sent in with a bucket of water. Water protectors were out there putting out the fire ourselves all night long. That was probably started by DAPL security. What's really scary here is that they have private security forces, including GS4 and Tiger Swan, which are tier one, militarized, highly trained people directly back from Afghanistan and Iraq, out here with all of the equipment, the guns, the wartime machinery and equipment against unarmed water protectors. We have our drums and we have our SAGE. So it's really a crazy thing to be on the ground and see how we're being treated as humanity, not just even natives, because we have a lot of allies here too. And that day, that Sunday, you know, the Morton County Sheriff's Department continues to just blatantly lie about what they're using and the tactics they're using. And that is what a lot of the media is picking up on or using, is the Morton County Sheriff's Department reports, and they are flat out lying to people. Look at what happened with Sophia Lewinsky. She is undergoing several surgeries. The last update I had, the first surgery she had, they took a vein out of her leg to put it into her arm. The next surgery, they took muscles out of her back to reconstruct the muscles in her arm. All of these surgeries that she's having are to try to reconstruct and save her arm, and that's not even a certainty yet that they're going to be able to do that, because a concussion grenade blew up white when it hit her arm. And what people need to know is that there was a guy standing right next to her that saw it happen. The grenade actually hit her just in her chest area, in her neck chest area, and bounced off and hit her arm, and then that's when it exploded. Had that exploded when it hit her chest, you know, it's crazy what they're doing to us out here. And another friend of mine, Susie, she got hit right in the eye, right above the eye. She's undergoing retinal surgery. She may not be able to see out of her right eye if they can't fix that. And so people had their head got hit in the head at close force with rubber bullets. A guy's scalp was hanging off and had to be stapled back on. And all he was doing was standing on the front line saying, "Stop shooting at us. Please stop shooting at us." And they shot him from 12 feet away. And when he turned to run, they shot him in the back.
You mentioned Sophia Walensky. She's a 21-year-old from New York City. Her dad flew to the hospital as soon as he found out what was happening, and she had to be airlifted. And he said she's going to need at least 20 surgeries over the next few months.
Yes. And all she could say to her parents is that she's sorry that she's putting them through this. And so we have people on the ground here that are in contact with Sophia and with her dad. And it's just a really horrible, horrific thing. And the only thing the Morton County Sheriff's Department is saying is, you know, they're basically implying that it's our fault. They even said they found a little one-pound propane canister and that it was the water protectors that that did that to her. And the canister they show, it's all beat up, but it's not blown up. It's fully intact. And so, you know, the biggest thing here is, where is President Obama? Where are you? We are feeling so rejected and so disregarded. We're so disappointed that we have had to fight this long and this hard, and there's silence on that end. We cannot understand why an intervention has been done to this point. Who really holds the purse strings? Who really has the power and control? This fight and this battle is showing this country how much authority that has been given over to the industry where it should not be, and who is holding the pocketbooks of our own politicians.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned that the last time Obama spoke about Standing Rock was on November 2nd, when he was asked by a new startup called Now This, which most people had never heard of. And he said what so many, well, very few politicians have bothered to talk about it at all. But he said, I want to be sure that everybody is exercising their right to be heard. Both sides are refraining from situations that might result in people being hurt. But Candy, I just wanted to ask you quickly, you talked about a number of people who've been hurt. When the Sunday action was happening, so many people were watching Facebook Live. Hundreds of thousands of people around the world were watching what was going on. Mm-hmm. And the medics are amazing, but they're dealing with these horrific injuries in freezing temperatures. So can you talk about how people are getting the health care that they need?
It's been really challenging. We do have medics on site, but like you said, that day when we were sprayed by the water, it was 24 degrees, and with the wind chill, it was 18. Mm-hmm. And so it was what people don't see when you're not here. You often just see the violence. You don't really see the community and the love and the pulling together. It was like everybody came together to make it possible so that people could be helped. They were borrowing vehicles, putting them in, rushing them back to camp where the medics had triage set up. And it was a whole triage system so that people could get whatever care it was they needed, whether it was getting taken away by ambulances, 26 people did need to do, or some of the people that you don't even know about. 300 were treated that night. They've had about 200 more that have come in since then with other injuries that they considered minor. They didn't want to bug the medics that night. So people with cut fingers from the razor wire, people with respiratory problems, people with ears ringing from the percussion grenades constantly going off, have been continued to be treated at the camp as a result of the treatment that we received that night. And so it's a community here. We have about 10,000 people in the camp right now.
Wow.
And all of these medics are volunteering.
Mm. And Candy, today we're speaking with Candy Mossett, an organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network, and we're getting an update from Standing Rock. The Army Corps of Engineers says it plans to close the main camp at Standing Rock by December 5th. It says it will not forcibly remove anyone, but those who do stay risk being arrested. Water protectors say they're not going anywhere. Candy, earlier you mentioned these private security firms. And these police are in riot gear with so many different weapons. How have you been able to confirm that private security firms are working alongside police officers?
They have been identified by the legal teams. They've been identified through DAPL themselves, Dakota Access Pipeline. They were hired by Dakota Access Pipeline. The scary thing is that they're just allowed to work with the Morton County Sheriff's Department. And so like on October 27th, when we were on the front line, they were all just mixed and mingled together with sheriffs and police from seven different states, as well as these private security. And those ones, you could definitely tell who they were because they were completely masked up and covered, and they had microphones. So they were talking and communicating to each other, and you would see that they were talking, pointing orders, and then something would happen, then an advance would happen. But here in North Dakota, you know, the police that are here, the Morton County Sheriff's Department, they're not used to this. They're not used to this level of pushback against the fossil fuel industry in a fossil fuel state. And so it's almost like they've been letting some of these outsiders call the shots, and I think to their detriment, because that is why people have been getting injured. That's why you have trigger happy people. They're trained in military style tactics. They learn how to behave against violence and aggression. They are taught how to combat violence against violence. They don't really know how to handle people that are praying. And you see it on the line. You can see their confusion. And yet they feel there's a necessity to be there. The state has spent over $10 million. So it's almost like they feel like they need to do something because they've spent all of our money, we as taxpayers, by keeping us here, you know, in something that is becoming obsolete. The amount of oil production coming out of the Bakken Shale oil formation, where this oil is coming from, is dropped so low, and the prices have dropped so low that the pipeline itself is in question whether we even need that transportation capacity. And so it's just, yeah.
What are your thoughts on the veterans who plan to arrive on December 4th?
Well, I've been in meetings, and I think it's really great. They're, you know, formulating plans and what they're going to do. And right now, the RSVP is now up to 2,000 veterans.
Wow.
Coming, and it's between December 4th and December 7th, and you know, they're all meeting, they're all going to get together when they get here to talk about the plans. But I think and hope and pray that it's a wake-up call for other veterans and other people around the world to see that, you know, in this country, a lot of veterans fought for freedoms for all Americans, for all people, for anybody that lives in here. And that you know, that slogan, freedom is not free, is so true. And freedom is not free even if you live in the U.S., because we're proof of that. If you're a person that fights back against the industry here and goes up against multi-billion dollar projects, you are subject to being attacked by your own government's military system. That has been showed by the Army National Guard, and that has been showed by the police.
We have time for just a few more calls, and if you can be quick, we're almost out of time. Let's go to Danny in Richmond. Hi, Danny.
Hey, it's Danny Larson. Thanks, Candy, for all your work.
You're welcome, Danny.
And, you know, I heard a disturbing story the other day on NPR from over there in Fort Berthold, where the tribal leaders were talking about how they supported the oil industry, and there was no counterpoint. And I wondered why NPR would not feature you with the counterpoint, because I know you know the story there.
Were they talking specifically about the Dakota Access oil pipeline?
They did mention that, for sure.
Okay.
They've had an issue there for years where there was a former tribal chief, Tex Hall, who wanted to build an oil refinery, who is, I don't know if he's been convicted of murder yet, but he was a little bit controversial, shall we say. Right, Candy?
Yeah, he hasn't been convicted of anything. And what happened was our tribal chairman, the Mandan Hidatsa Rikara Nation, did sign an easement with Dakota Access Pipeline on December 2nd, 2015. They allowed Dakota Access Pipeline to cut across our Buffalo Ranch. And what our tribal chairman, Mark Fox, says is that we never allowed them to come across the Fort Berthold Reservation, which is true. The Buffalo Ranch, which we own, is just off the reservation, but they never got the land put into trust, and so it's fee land. And what they told me is that this company told them, if you do not allow us to build it and give you money for it, we will condemn the land and we will build it anyways.
Well, and Candy, I mean, I've been to a couple of the teach-ins at Standing Rock or in Bismarck, and people who live near Standing Rock but are with other tribes say that in some cases their tribes sell them out, the tribal leaders.
It's a bullying tactic. We've been put through so much historically. This isn't just a 2016 issue. This is a 500-year issue. We have never changed our narrative about how you have to care for the planet for her to care for us, that capitalism and colonization is not sustainable, nor will it ever be sustainable. We have never changed what we've said, but what has happened is that we've been beaten down, pushed aside, practically terminated in this country as a result of federal laws and policy, as a result of the immigrants that came here. And this country is built on the taking and raping of indigenous lands. And until we get to the root cause of that problem, which makes everybody uncomfortable, this kind of stuff is going to continue. And so we're here to say we are still here. We never went anywhere. We weren't killed off. And we still have that same fighting spirit and are reclaiming that.
And Candy, we've got about a minute left. We have a few other calls and emails about people, how people can support you and your plans for the winter. I mean, especially in light of this Army Corps announcement saying that the main camp has to close by December 5th. What's going to happen that day? I mean, there are still a lot of questions that have to be answered, but what happens on December 5th?
I think that people need to know that we are not planning on going anywhere on December 5th. Nothing is going to happen on December 5th. We're going to be here. We're not going to be put in a fearful state. We're not going to be told that we're going to do this to you and you should therefore run. Because like I said, we have already gone through these many times of genocide. And this is actually a beautiful moment of coming together in unity where we have now 738 tribes in 22 countries and people around the world standing with Standing Rock. And that just goes to show you that this planet and the people on it are ready for this. We're the movement that people have been waiting for, and we're not going to let people down by backing down. We're not going to end this without a fight. We're going to remain here, and so people can pray. Number one, send your prayers for us. You can also donate directly to the tribe at standwithstandingrock.net. You can donate to achetishakoincamp.org, sacredstonecamp.org, or directly to the Indigenous Environmental Network at indigenousrising.org as we continue to build the winter camp in the Just Transition Village, which is going to be left here for generations to come after we win this battle.
And we will put links at our website, yourcallradio.org. Candy Mossett is an organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network. Candy, thank you for driving in stormy conditions to do this interview. We really appreciate it.
Matagadads, thank you. Everybody be safe if you come here. It is super, super, super slippery. There's all kinds of cars in the ditch.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Candy. And I'll be posting regular updates about what is happening at Standing Rock on KALW's Facebook page, so be sure to closely watch that. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for listening. It's your call. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with investigative journalist David K. Johnston about Donald Trump's tax proposal. During the campaign, Trump promised the biggest tax cut since Ronald Reagan. He wants to slash the top business tax rate from 35% to 15%. According to the Tax Policy Center, his plan would cost the government $6.2 trillion over 10 years. So how will this impact you? Join the conversation live at 10 a.m. with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.